You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
I want to say good morning, but I don't want to.
Then let me do it. Good morning, everyone. How are you doing? Welcome in to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
No, brought to you by there. It's just a morning. It's just it's rainy.
It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Now you may proceed with your misery.
It's rainy. It's cold. My golf plans for the weekend kind of up in the air.
No, they're not. Not yet.
Not yet.
There he is, Captain Optimism. He's back.
Here I come to save the day.
He was holding me by a thread this morning when I'm like, hey, man, golf's not looking great. And he's like, no, we might go out here. They're not going to get that much rain. We'll be fine. And I'm like, I needed that today.
Braveheart.
Hold. It was 8 in the morning, and I'm like, why am I even up today? This is ridiculous.
You're telling everyone to hold the line. You're Mel Gibson and the Patriot. You take the flag, you start running the other way. Captain Optimism is back.
Give me a flag with a big O.
Yes.
Those Mel Gibson movies, good cinema, terrible historical accuracy, though.
Oh, yeah.
Terrible.
Come on.
But, man, you got to love Braveheart. Braveheart's a good time. I haven't watched it in a long time. Great time, though.
Yeah, those are both the same actor.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I just forgot about that for some dumb second there.
Yeah.
Mel's got a filmography, man.
Mel's got a filmography, and Josh has Captain Optimism.
We all need it every now and then. I mean, you wake up on a cruddy Wednesday.
He's going to get a $2 cape. It's going to say Optimism on the back of it.
Oh. Are you going to spell the whole world? It's a little bit of a long word for just a cape. Or are you going to shorten
it? The best part is like, we're going to misspell Optimism.
That's the key.
How do you shorten it and misspell it at the same time?
Optimism.
Optimism.
Ugh.
Yeah. We're going to make it dumb.
All right.
Speaking of making it dumb, NFL rule changes going on today.
What a transition.
We've had already, before noon, we've had a proposal withdrawn. I know Jeremy and Nate were talking about it a lot today. The Lions have withdrawn their playoff proposal, which is a little frustrating. I wanted to talk a little bit more about it. It sounds like it'll be not tabled like the tush push was, but more pushed to the sideline. We might go back to it. We might not. It's just been fully withdrawn. Also, around 8 o'clock this morning, Diana Rossini of The Athletic was, I believe, the first to report that the tush push is likely going to get banned. Derek, I know how thrilled you are to be back into the tush push conversation. It had been so long since the NFL owners' meetings when this was first brought up, but it does appear that, funny enough, the coalition, maybe even led by the Bills, maybe not, but at least we know Sean McDermott's been a main figurehead in this, has gotten enough support, at least it appears, to ban the play. I simply could not care less.
Honestly, ready? And this is what it is for me at this point. I want one team that is voting for this to just say it with their chest.
Mm-hmm.
Be real. Something Bulldog is pointing out, and I've been on this boat too. I've just been a stowaway the whole time. Just say it looks like trash.
Mm-hmm.
Say the play looks boring. Be real about it. If you don't want it, make that the case. Why? I remember I'm screaming out in the newsroom in the NFC Championship getting ready for Bills Chiefs later that night. Oh, did I know my misery was going to end up going tenfold that night?
Yeah, you didn't realize that was foreshadowing.
I'm yelling at the TV of just snap the football because they keep baiting Washington into offsides to where they might get a touchdown on penalty. And I'm like, this is bad for the game.
I wanted that so bad, though. For that reason, it would make everyone look themselves in the face
and go, what are we doing?
What are we doing? I wanted it so badly.
So,
and it didn't happen.
Is, we're getting to the same end result anyway.
Yeah, we are.
I want teams to say it with their chest. If you want the play banned because it just looks goofy and it looks like rugby and not football, just say it. Just say it, please. Otherwise, leave it alone. At this point, I'm calling the Green Bay Packers out. I hope they get penalized more than any team in the National Football League.
Because they won't say it with their chest.
Because they're being soft about it.
Just be like, it looks gross. It makes fourth downs boring. We did lose to it.
Say that it looks like poopy caca. And we lost to it, so we're sour grapes.
I mean,
that's
pretty much what it is.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean,
just be real about it.
It is funny too, because
coming from a team where we see the team benefit from it, we watch the Bills every week, and we see them benefit from this play. They're over here. I wish Sean McDermott would say it with his chest. My opinion on him would grow
A thousandfold. If he just said, yeah, it's a bad play.
Yeah, I think it looks ugly.
I just want him to say it looks bad.
If he said that with Sal and Matt during his sit down with them.
Oh, my God.
Through the roof.
The man
through
would
the
be roof. A king to me at that point. Through you the are, roof. Ready? If he says it, I forgive him immediately for 13 seconds.
All right, well, now that's a bit
aggressive.
Nope,
that's me saying it aggressively. That is because, Zach, what is there one thing about me? I like to be genuine as much as possible. I want one team to stop doing the media speak and just say it. Just say it.
Well, and on the media speak, too, and I know we talked a lot about this.
Talk to us like we're all buddies at the bar.
Yeah.
And say, yeah, the play looks like garbage.
Well, so on the being honest and kind of saying what you actually mean, we talked with Sal at the owners' meetings when they were down in Florida when this was first being brought up. And the big thing, especially for McDermott, was the health risks. Now, ultimately, there isn't any evidence to point to injury risks, or at least to this point. And I know me and Sal kind of went back and forth on, what is this more the committee's trying to get ahead of it and prevent future injuries? That could absolutely be one of the reasons. I find it to be like fourth or fifth, though. I think a big part of this, a lot like the kickoffs and why they changed it, the play got boring. And it doesn't look that good. And we don't really like that a lot of people on fourth and one
are just doing this.
Fans, though, are going, let's get, they're going to make it. Yeah. Why do I care? I don't have to sit and watch with bated breath on this play because it's fourth and one. They don't. Now, ultimately, it wasn't perfect. The Bills' last taste with this play was it failing them multiple times, whether it be a bad spot or not. It did not look nearly as good as it had throughout the year. And so maybe
the difference is also because the Bills play a variant of it.
Yeah.
It is not the same thing that Philadelphia does.
Right. It is not the brotherly shove or
Josh
whatever
Allen
they call it.
Hits a different gap with intention. He always veers off. He doesn't go straight on through.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the failure came in. It's something that you can watch on tape. What can I grab from tape for Philadelphia's variation? The true variation of this. What can I gather on the tape of that? What can I learn? What can I counter with? My answer is Desmond Watson, the UDFA from that signed in Tampa.
It's bigger guys. It's really about it.
I need guys that have no business being in the league just because they're large.
And look, there's probably a sentiment of fans that like the effectively strongman contests on fourth and one. I won't fight you on that if you like it. I don't disagree with people, though. I'm incredibly bored by the play.
It is not aesthetically a good play.
No. And this doesn't matter, but for me personally and sort of the aesthetic of it, I don't like when my quarterback or my team are called like 1 yard merchants when it comes to touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Like Allen getting like 10 2 yard and in touchdown. I don't like that. Now, quarterbacks sneaks have always been a part of the game. It's not going to change. And ultimately, my big point here is I don't think this will change how the Eagles and Bills operate all that much. They will still be two of the most efficient teams when it comes to QB sneaks. They just can't do this aspect of it.
They can't have players forming up behind them to do that.
Yeah.
You know what it does, though? It opens a lot more for deception if this happens. And again, all I need for is someone to say, yeah, I don't like how it looks.
Yep.
It just looks like a boring play. It looks gross. It looks not very pleasing. It's not very entertaining. Because that's the real issue behind all of it, other than Green Bay being sour grapes.
Yeah. We are expected to know during the show, it looks like. Diane Rossini tweeted about 8 minutes ago, the owners are heading into the meeting now. In minutes, we'll know the tush push's fate. So that's at least exciting. It won't be like the flag football stuff yesterday where there was growing support there, but we didn't find out until like 3:30 yesterday.
The only major reason that I'm okay with this now is that I don't have to keep saying tush push.
No, I kind of miss it.
No, I'm not going to miss it for a second. That's the one degree of solace I will take from this.
It gave the league character.
No. Hmm. No, because no one's using that character at this point.
No.
And saying it's a gross play.
I did like Jeremy and Nate's point, too, this morning when they were trying to figure out like who the third team was that benefits from this play a lot. And when you do kind of start running through it, you realize how few teams are actually using this.
It's a sour grapes thing.
It's a sour grapes, and it's just it's a boring play. Let's move. It looks too much like rugby. It's not a quote unquote football play. Let's get back to
just say it.
But I think just say it, because ultimately the NFL's been fairly open about, yeah, there's health risks to the kickoff. We're changing it for that reason. But also, we want people to stay seated. We want people to be excited for the kickoff again.
We don't want it to be a blast for a touchback, and that's
yeah. And so now you're seeing kind of the variations, and they're figuring it out, to the point where you have teams loading up on kick returners because they're anticipating now, with the touchback being moved up, okay, teams are going to be far more willing to get the return guy the ball, not to just touchback, start at the 20, let's go. You know, now it's a little bit different. I'd like to see that too, where, and you know, Jeremy was bringing up this morning, go back to a few years ago with Tom Brady, where they would spread the defense out. All of a sudden, five guys are out there looking like they're going to run a route, but they run a QB sneak. Or they don't. They hand the ball off, what have you. There's more room for deception. There's more room for OCs to get a little creative, have a little more fun.
And furthermore, what can I take off the tape?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's nothing that I could – like, even Buffalo's variation of this, the second most successful team doing this play, there was something you could take away from it for study. The mm-hmm. Eagles, you cannot study it. It is inevitable to a point where Washington's trying to jump the snap count.
That really might have been the nail in the coffin, isn't it?
That sequence is absolutely the nail in the coffin.
Like, I know Green Bay is the team that's been lobbying this the most. But I think for a lot failures. Of fans, that was sort of the, yeah. Okay, we're done with this.
Yeah. And that was me.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I got to that point of, all right, just snap the football, please. Enough. Stop baiting them, because we all know what's going to happen in about 2 seconds anyway. Snap the ball.
Yep.
Stop doing this. It was an embarrassing look for the league. And that play in that sequence in that game is why more teams are probably behind it.
Yeah, where they're just like, yeah, this is bad for our sport. And there was a call yesterday for Shopping the Bulldog that I really agreed with, where basically his thesis was, there's never really any rhyme or reason to a lot of these rule changes. It's just for how does it make the game look?
The Bills, we
could technically have, if we wanted to, you could hold guys. Cool. It's a game of strength. Can as a receiver, can you get the corner off you and go down the field? Or can you drag him down first? But we don't do that. It doesn't look good. It's not aesthetically pleasing. It's the same with this play. There doesn't have to be a rhyme or reason to it. There could be with the sour grapes from Green Bay and what have you. But I think for a lot of people, it's just more, yeah, I kind of hate how it looks, and it makes fourth and one, which should be a very tense situation, yeah. Dramatic situation. It's made it boring. It's made it, for two teams who use it more than anyone else, a foregone conclusion.
As a matter of fact, let's look at the Bills. In the AFC Championship, they have a problem converting that type of play.
Mm-hmm.
And on a fourth and goal, what do? They don't go back to the well.
Correct.
They hand it to James Cook, who...
It's a nearly iconic play in Bills history. They win that game.
To where as close can get, he gets a touchdown. That's drama. That's entertainment. It's a play that I remember in that game that they lose.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned entertainment there. I think that's maybe the most important thing to remember with any sports league. It's all about entertainment.
Hell, look at the Bills with the rule change with overtime.
It's all about entertainment.
It's not just about entertainment. That one's also a little bit about sour grapes.
That one's sour grapes, but you could say it's to make it more fair, what have you. It's
the narrative. The Bills offense never got a chance to touch the ball.
Yeah, so for entertainment purposes, we want the two best quarterbacks to have both a chance at this. We don't want to leave Josh Allen or whoever, because remember, the Chiefs started it with the Patriots mm-hmm. when they lost in overtime. So they all come from sour grapes, but the league will do it because when they sit in these owner meetings, they'll go, what's going to be more entertaining? What's going to keep us in the zeitgeist in the offseason longer?
What keeps us king?
Bingo. The NBA is trying to do it. The NBA is trying to do it with their in-season tournaments, and they're doing it now with parity, where you can't really stack rosters. It's a lot of, you can have an A-plus player, you can't have two or three. You know, they're trying to make it more entertaining. The NHL seems to be the only league that's not trying to make it more entertaining. Baseball did this.
The NHL's in the corner eating pace.
Yeah. Baseball did this with, let's speed up the game. What's going to keep people locked on TV? Keep them in the ballpark. We'll speed up the game. You got a pitch clock. Let's go. Does anyone care about it after the first year or so? No, most people have liked it.
Yep.
I mean, so like that's the, everything they do is just what is going to be the most entertain. What is going to lead to the most entertainment for our viewers? And that's why they're doing it. And the tush push is boring, and it's a foregone conclusion. It takes away a lot of the excitement of the game. And really, even with the Bills failing, what's the big takeaway from the tush push for the Bills game? It's the fact that the officials botched the spot.
Yep,
they don't like that. So they're like, all right, we're going to move on from that. You got to run a different play. It might ultimately look nearly the same with a quarterback sneak. But as you mentioned, the Bills had to change it up. And instead you had this wicked play by James Cook that should be in like the annals of Bills lore forever, even in a loss. But in a win, we've been talking about a contract negotiation for him for months now.
Oh, if we win that game
and he scores, what, you want $25 million? Cool.
Yeah.
It's Super Bowl tax, baby. I don't care. He's a hero to me. Yeah. Like, that's where you're at. And that's where the league wants you to be. They don't want you to go, well, Josh Allen, he had 17 rushing touchdowns this year. 11 of them were within 6 inches. They don't want that. It's not entertaining.
They don't want ways to disparage players for their statistical wonders.
Mm-hmm.
Because context sometimes is important. And again, it's about staying king.
Yep.
You mentioned it. 4th-and-1 against the Philadelphia Eagles is a foregone conclusion. You know they're making the play. Say we're watching a game in Week 17 and the play is not banned and the Bills have forced a 4th-and-short. You're automatically assuming that they're going to extend the drive.
Yeah.
Automatically.
It becomes, I'm going to go get a snack. We're still driving.
We're going
to... I'm going to get up real quick because I know what this play will be.
I'm going to go get a snack because I know that the Bills will still be on defense when I go sit back down.
Mm-hmm.
It is, the league does not love foregone conclusions. The league loves having its entertainment dollar maximized. How do you stay king? You make moves that for some may seem unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
Some of you may die, but that is a sacrifice I am willing to make. Always up for my dog lore for our quad.
Such a good movie. 803-0550, the number two call. We'll be talking a lot about the tush push, especially with that ruling expected to come down in the next few minutes, according to Diane Rossini, as the owners are meeting now. Your thoughts on the tush push? Do you think it'll even matter for the Bills when this, it feels like, is inevitably banned? I think me and Derek are in the same agreement.
Yeah,
I don't think. Yeah, I don't think we think it's going to hurt the Bills at all. If anything,
no.
It might make the games more exciting. Might hurt them in some games, but also might make them more exciting. I do, though, want to talk about the rule change that was withdrawn.
Actually, now, we'll talk more about that one. I do want to have my finishing thoughts based on the question. Mm-hmm. Like, you asked it to everyone. Does it matter for the Bills ultimately? No. Not a minute. The Bills have, until the Bills end up with, like, Rick Dennison as their coordinator again for some reason, the Bills have creativity and they have options. They have options because they have the quarterback. You can do so much on a 4th-and-short. Look at how the Patriots used to do the quarterback sneak. And it was a pure quarterback sneak. It wasn't players shoveling in behind him to propel him. Because that was a rule at some point. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened when they took the rule away, but it was between then and now.
Sal talks about it all the time. Like, that was
everyone
rule. Everyone knew you couldn't push guys.
When
you
did that
couldn't
stop?
Do it.
Yeah, when did that stop getting enforced? Nobody told me.
Mm-hmm.
So
it definitely happened, but we just weren't paying attention to the league meetings like we are now.
It's because the Bills are good now.
I think the NFL is a whole. Like, everyone's like, league meetings, who cares? Yeah. Now it's like, oh, well, you know, we got to point out all the coaches that didn't go this year for the photo.
Yeah, it's just, you know what you can do? You can do this. I think that it does not matter at all to the Bills. They have, there will end up being some plays that we end up cursing out coordinators because of it. But that happens with every team.
Mm-hmm.
Why not just make more of those plays happen? Where, do you play it safe? Do you play it a little more creative? Do you try to spread a defense out and then go with the quarterback sneak? The Bills can do that because they have a linebacker at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But what do the Eagles do? Probably the same thing, too. They just don't have players lining up behind to push Jalen Hurts. Because they have a great offensive line. They have a quarterback that can squat almost 700 pounds. Disgusting.
Isn't it at 700?
I think it is.
Unreal.
Exactly. And he does something that could be Like, it is a skill that he has based on his strength in his lower body. Guess what? Teams could still try to stack the box against the Eagles. It might not matter anyway.
Yeah. I think both teams will still be the two, if not the two most, they're both going to be top five most efficient teams on fourth and one.
And it'll still be quarterback sneaks back like the way it was always intended to be.
Yeah. It is funny that this play in particular has gotten a lot of people in an uproar because it I think for both teams, it simply will not matter to how successful they are. It really is just, this is ugly. It looks too much like rugby. Let's move on.
Okay.
We, I think, have made more of a thing about it because the Bills are part of it. And it's been kind of weird because the Bills have been successful, but the head coach of the team hates the play. And so it is this kind of curious, like, oh, okay. Okay, interesting. But I think for the most part, you know, if the Eagles didn't win the Super Bowl this year, I wonder how much, like, this is really a hoopla that it is.
Considering if the NFC Championship thing still happens.
What if the Rams just beat him in the divisional round, though? Rams are close. The Rams beat him in the divisional round. I think this play gets banned and no one cares because it's ugly. But now that they've won, it's this more, there's health risks. Ready? And the Eagles don't want it gone. Jason Kelsey's in Minneapolis to try to, like, you know.
And I'll tell you the other side of it. If the Eagles lost against the Rams in the divisional round, we're not even having this conversation. Because the Green Bay Packers don't lose to them in the playoffs and get sour grapes about it.
Yeah, but it could have been another team. I mean,
nope.
It could have been another team.
No.
The Bills could have pushed for it. The Bills have been pushing for it.
But the Bills have been pushing for it because someone else said it. It's a team needed to be bold enough to actually sit up there and say something about it and embarrass themselves for it.
Mm.
To a point where, yeah, no. If they lost in the divisional round, the Rams could have looked at everyone and said, we beat them. So what?
Yeah.
And
we beat them in the snow.
Yeah. I don't think that,
super embarrassing.
It's because the Philadelphia Eagles won the Super Bowl. It's because of that NFC Championship sequence against Washington that there is more support for removing the play. The Philadelphia Eagles made the Super Bowl. The tush push was beginning to be a thing. And Philadelphia was mortal. It's because they won. It's sour grapes. Yeah. I want a team to admit it. I want Green Bay to admit it. And I hate them for not admitting it. Like, I
think Green Bay had to take the mark. And there's been rumblings, I think, there, too, that because they don't have an owner, per se, they don't have a face to this, they've been, like, kind of the easy team they can do it because it's the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, they needed so you're saying the teams wanted a patsy?
Yeah. And so on that, I think for me, fans were done with the play, the Washington sequence. I think teams have been kind of done with it all year and were just sort of waiting for the year to end to do this. Green Bay was just the easy, we'll push them out front and do this. But, like, that's my thing is the Bills could have just kept quiet about it. The Bills are good at the play. I think the Bills were fine to come out against it this year anyways because they are good at it and don't like it.
I don't think that it would have gotten as much support. If that sequence in the NFC Championship game doesn't happen, if the Eagles are eliminated in the second round of the playoffs, how much support do you really have?
I mean, it was tabled. I mean, so they didn't even have, like, initial support either.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I think a lot of this comes down to it's boring and they want to move on from plays that take intensity out of the game.
And that's why I just want one team to say it, because otherwise I kind of hate the Green Bay Packers for being cowards about it. Because otherwise it looks to me like it's sour grapes.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number two call. Again, a little bit more on the tush push. We're still waiting to see if it does officially get banned. Do want to talk about the playoff proposal by the Lions that was withdrawn. I think that is going to come back into conversation throughout the year as that will, I think, is going to be something to be discussed much more. And I don't love a lot of what they're proposing, but I do like a lot of it. But before we hit our first time out, join us in the fight against cancer by riding with Bulldog and WGR's Ride for Roswell team on Saturday, June 28th. Once you join our team, you will receive an email to pick up your team t-shirt and water bottle at Tom's Pro Bike on Walden Avenue in Lancaster. Not a rider? You can still support the cause by donating to our team and helping us reach our goal of $10,000 before the ride. Visit WGR550.com for details. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer here until 12 o'clock. You're listening to WGR.
Game on the line, fourth and one on the goal line. What play are you running?
I'm running.
There's only one right answer.
Some type of rollout.
There's only one correct answer, and that's because it is the highest percentage chance of getting 1 yard. And that's quarterback sneak.
Quarterback sneaking it?
It blows my mind how many teams do not run a quarterback sneak with 1 goddamn yard. What the are you doing? It's a 92% chance. There is not a play in the playbook that has a higher percentage chance of working than quarterback sneak.
That is former Eagle center Jason Kelce, I think back in 2023.
And with his brother Travis Kelce talking about it on the other side of it.
So
Travis Kelce calls a rollout.
Right. He's in Jason Kelce. He's in Minneapolis. It sounds like he's with Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie, going into the owners' meetings, trying to lobby one last time
please
to keep this play.
Please don't take the play away.
It is funny that like we were sitting there listening to that clip, and he's explosive, and he's passionate about it. I mean, their podcast is really good too. I mean, they kind of go off the cuff a little bit, but on that, to me, I think that's a big reason why they're banning it. I think is exactly how Jason Kelce put it. There's one right answer. You're right for teams like Eagles and the Bills. There's one right answer, and that is exceptionally boring. For a team that has Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown and Devonta Smith and Saquon Barkley and a Bills team with Josh Allen and James Cook,
I'm now more firmly entrenched into the Washington sequence made this happen.
Yeah, you're there with that. I think for fans it did. I think for teams they were out for a while.
I think for Roger it did.
Mm.
I'm sorry, but that is an embarrassment on your entire league.
Was he at that game?
I don't know if he was, but he doesn't have to be.
So much better if he was at that game. Just like looking and shaking his head.
Because Bills Chiefs was the same day.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the thing being, you're the commissioner of the league, and that is what's going out there in the NFC Championship game. That sequence is happening. Ew.
Could you see Roger just shaking his head in disappointment?
Yeah, he's probably...
What are we doing?
He's probably flipping a gasket on that. And the thing is that it is effectively nerfing one team.
I don't even know if it's hurting either team. I really don't. I think it's going to upset. Kelce seems like he's going to be upset about this. He's in Minneapolis, but outside
nerfing,
of that, you know,
nerfing and hurting are two different words.
They have the same connotation.
They have the same connotation. But does this affect the Eagles that much? No. But does it lower their percentages a little?
Mm.
Because how Jason says in that clip in 2023, there's one right answer. Now you have to find a different answer sometimes. And therefore your percentage will go down.
It is funny though that like we're talking about more entertaining, but really for like 90% of this, it's going to be 4th and inches. Cool, quarterback sneak. Let's go. That's what it's going to be. But 4th and 1s, 4th and 2s. Might be something a little bit different. We do have one new rule change coming from the owners' meetings that got passed just as we went to break. It is the tweak to the onside kick. Kicking teams now line up 1 yard closer, and a team can attempt it at any time while trailing, not just in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
I don't know why it had to just be the fourth quarter anyways, but I'm glad we got there a year later.
I'm glad we got there a year later. Good. Because now if a team is down by large enough, they can try it. Mm-hmm. They still have to announce it, but they can try it. Yeah, that was very archaic.
It just made no sense. It felt like, honestly, you know what it felt like? It felt like someone forgot to put it in. And then the rule went through and they went, oh.
Wait, why did we put that?
Yeah, why did we put that in? That was meant to be in the rough draft, not the final draft. We've all been there. We've all turned in an assignment late and gone, oh, crap, I forgot to cut that out. Email professor real quick.
Yeah, 2 paragraphs in there.
Mm-hmm.
Whoops.
Repeat paragraph, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Do want to talk about something that we know is not going to get passed today. It's not even going to go to a vote. It was withdrawn. That's the Detroit Lions proposal to change up the playoffs. Funny that they're the team that did it, though. Basically, what this would do is that we would now see teams 1 through 7. Not division winners, but by record. I am up and down about how I feel about this. I like the idea that we're not going to reward, you know, before a 7-9 team. Now it'd be more closely aligned to like an 8-9 team. But what I do hate is the idea of hurting division winners.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are sometimes bad divisions. There are also sometimes great divisions. We've seen both relatively recently.
Yes.
Last year it was the NFC North, where Minnesota, by all right, was a top 3 team in the NFC. We're second in their division.
They were playing
Detroit.
For the 1 seed or mm-hmm. the 5 seed against Detroit.
Yeah. And ultimately, Detroit was playing for the same thing. Detroit loses that game to Minnesota. They go to the 5.
Right.
And not the 1. Ultimately, didn't help either of them. They both lose their first playoff game. But to neither here nor there, We've also seen teams, though, be 7-9 or, you know, what would it be, 7-10 now, 8-9, whatever, made the playoffs, host a playoff game. And I think that's really where this all comes from. It's these bad teams hosting playoff games, that four seed.
Yes.
It's always the four seed.
It's always the weakest division that ends up with this thing. Mm-hmm. And there's always a wild card team typically that's better than them that now has to go on the road. And I think to myself, I mean, maybe there are times where it's absolutely deserved. I think back to the 2020 NFC East.
Yep.
A 7-9 team hosts a playoff game. And the 6-10 New York Giants are putting up a bitch fit.
They were upset.
About the Eagles playing Nate Sudfeld.
Oh, that's right. They were upset.
Joe Judge.
The Eagles were tanking for a pick. Is it the pick ultimately got them Devonta Smith, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, so I will never forget that one because of how shameless Joe Judge looked. Not because Washington ended up 7-9 and hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and they lost that game. Tyler Heinicke had himself a great day against Tampa. He had that dog.
That was a fun game.
But I remember it more for Joe Judge just sounding like the ultimate loser.
It wasn't even just him. It was Giants players. I remember all over Twitter. Yeah, and they were genuinely complaining that a 6-10 team did not have a chance to get into the playoffs in the final week. And you're like, what are you talking about?
You're 6-10. You're lucky you're even in this conversation.
You shouldn't be in the conversation. And so that's ultimately the big part. You shouldn't be in the conversation.
None of you should even be making the playoffs this year. And I've got a 6-10 team complaining? So this would ultimately end those things. Mm-hmm. However, the proposal, like all initial proposals do, is a little too aggressive to start. That's why it had to be withdrawn. And part of that proposal had to do with, you win your division, you're still not guaranteed a playoff game. A playoff game, not a home playoff game.
Just a playoff game.
In your scenario,
the NFC East winner would not be in the playoffs.
Yes. In that 2020, for example, the NFC East would not have a representative in the entire postseason. And while I do understand that weak teams are weak teams, it's too aggressive to pass. I understand the sentiment. You want the best teams in there, and you want the best teams hosting. You cannot get away with a proposal like that where it says, I'm taking a division winner and throwing them out of the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That does not sit well. It will never sit well. You can't do that. This isn't college football with the four-team playoff. You can't do it. You need a representative from each division because there are going to be enough people that support it to resist. That's why it's getting tabled. That's why it got removed. It's because it's too aggressive. You got to smooth out the lines, like how the initial tush-push thing is going on. There's something in the language that's too aggressive.
It was unrefined. I don't know if we ever saw what the language was, but I would argue it was probably leaning more towards we're getting rid of quarterback sneaks.
Yes.
And everyone's like, whoa.
It's unrefined.
Yeah.
You need to smooth out the rough edges on the proposal, and then we will ultimately get what the proposal is all about, which is the better team should be hosting a playoff game.
Yeah, I saw Ari Meyer of the 33rd team. He was tweeting about this, and basically his point was this proposal for the playoffs, something like this is going to be brought back at least by next year, almost definitely when we go to that 18-week schedule.
18-game schedule, I'm going to throw up.
But so when we get to that, that's when it'll likely be coming up again because you are going to have to move some things around. Mm-hmm. I find it curious, especially with the modern playoffs where we're at, we already kind of have a team that shouldn't be in the playoffs. The seven seed shouldn't be in the playoffs. How long have we had it now? 5-6 years?
It's been a couple years, not 5-6, no.
Regardless, though, one team has won as a seven seed. It was Green Bay 2 years ago against Dallas. That's it.
Has it been that long, actually?
For the most part, not even for the most... Basically, outside of that, the two seed has just had to play a meaningless playoff game where they 95% of the time win it in a blowout, but potentially pick up an injury or two and go, great, I don't get a bye week like
Buffalo
I have
against Pittsburgh
forever. Yep. And now I'm hurt more. The one seed has, in a way, because of the seven seed being introduced, has sort of overpowered everything now. Like you talk about nerfing, you know, the Eagles and Bills. The one seed now is so valuable, where we know that teams now, Bills especially, talk about win your division first, you get a playoff game, then we go on to the next thing. In reality, and I know that is true, but in reality, the one seed, if you're really hunting down a Super Bowl, if you're one of those teams, that's the goal.
Yeah,
that's the one. Because you look at the advantage, it's not perfect. I mean, Detroit, I mentioned, they were the one seed, lost in the divisional round. It's
Tennessee,
not perfect.
Infamously a
Tennessee,
one seed.
Baltimore, same thing. It's not perfect, but it is a genuine, honest-to-God advantage compared to everybody else. And it's all for, effectively, a useless playoff team in the seventh seed.
Yep.
Now, and the seventh seeds often aren't even having these terrible records. I mean, Cincinnati's 9-8 the last 2 years. They can't even make the playoffs. The 8-9 seed.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so significantly worse than the rest of these teams. And I think that might be why we're seeing teams that want to like get a little bit more aggressive with this. But I think they're worried about the wrong thing. It's not these bad division winners. They come around every few years.
Yeah.
A bad division happens. A division loaded with
infamously
no quarterbacks.
The AFC or NFC South as of late.
Yeah. Yeah. But it doesn't happen all that much. It's the same. It doesn't always happen that much that you're going to have a 14-win team win the division and a 13-team win come second. That doesn't happen all that often.
That's not common at all. And we've seen it in the past where like a 10 or 11-win team misses the playoffs. And mm-hmm. like you said, thanks to the 7th seed, that is no longer a thing. And now we are seeing teams that should not be making the playoffs.
Yep.
Or teams that have no business being in a playoff chase, being in a playoff chase. And that's fine. I guess, even though like we see it hurting the Bills more times than not, of having to play that extra game and cure a couple more injuries and ultimately be at a disadvantage for that sort of thing. But I've also seen a stupid team wearing red helmets that apparently doesn't care what the advantage is at the one seed.
No, they get it done. They just get it
done. They just get it done. And
that's why I'm saying it's not perfect.
It's not perfect.
It's not the end-all, be-all.
But
there is a significant advantage there.
The other thing that it would really help is teams that are the 5 seed. Teams that are better than a division winner about half the time.
Mm-hmm.
There are times where it goes chalk for record and it's supposed to go that way.
Right.
There are times where the 5th seed is better than the 4th seed measurably and they have to go on the road. Boo-hoo, wah. I don't care about that. If you're the better team, you're the better team, and you can play and do it on the road.
Mm-hmm.
But I get it. It's just fascinating that it was Detroit.
Yeah.
The team that did not have anything about this with a deterrent or an issue. They did not have to deal with this at all.
I do wonder, though.
Maybe they see how the North is stacked at this point.
Yep.
They're trying to get a home playoff game.
And you've got a team in Detroit who is sort of new to this whole thing of making the playoffs regularly, having your season kind of being like, let's just get to January healthy. Now they're looking at it going, ooh, whoa.
Why do I have to be on the road all the time?
Yeah, we've just discovered this new form of getting money from our fans called the playoff games.
Yep.
And we'd like to not lose that. Because Minnesota's loaded, Green Bay's loaded, and Chicago keeps trying. Like, we'd rather not lose that.
Yep. And that's what that comes down to teams just wanting money if they know that they have a tough division. And I get it. At the same time, boo-hoo, wah. Win an extra game.
Right. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones here. Jason is up first today. Jason, how are we doing this morning?
Great, guys. I think I might have a small solution to the way that they're, we're thinking about the playoffs there. So even if you're a low win team, like a 7-9, and you won your division, you're going to make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You don't get it. You just then reseed it from there. You might be the 7th seed, but you at least made the playoffs because of that. Even though you had a terrible record, we're still going to allow you in, and we're going to seed things from there. So we take the mm-hmm. standard format as it is. Each division winner gets into the playoffs, and then the next three after that. But then you just get seeded as such.
Yeah, Jason, thanks for the call. That's where I'm at. I think the 4 division winners get it, and this is how I would do it. The 4 division winners, you're secured a playoff spot. Does not mean you're going to be seeds 1 through 4.
Right.
So, like to Jason's point, if you're that 8, 9, 7, and 10 team, baby, you're the 7th seed.
Yeah.
Congratulations, you've got a playoff game, but it's not at home, and you're not the 4 seed. You are going to be the 7th. You are a bad team that happened to make the playoffs because your division was bad. Now go do something. Now, ultimately, when we're looking at the playoff seedings, and we got to hit a break here real quick, but when we look at the playoff seedings from this year, it's not the healthiest in terms of like, oh, how is this really going to change? Like, the big change in the AFC is we're flipping two teams. The Chargers would have host Houston based off record. That's it.
And does that change Justin Herbert pooping his pants?
And that's really the only argument. Everything else is effectively the same. For the NFC, there's a few differences. Minnesota becomes the 3 seed, and they would play a different team and such. But there isn't this bad division winner who all of a sudden, yeah, gets moved right down to the 7 seed. And so that's I think, where they want to take it. The issue is division winners don't definitively get a playoff spot. I would have them get a definitive playoff spot, and so that might burn a team here or there. But we already have too many playoff teams as is. The 7 seed record against the 2 seed is simply not that good. 803-0550, the number to call. Thoughts on the now withdrawn playoff proposal by the Detroit Lions? I think it's super fascinating. I think it's also going to be something that is brought up a lot in the next few years as we get closer to even more games being played in the regular season. Also, I want to talk on some playoff actions. The conference finals began last night in the NBA and the NHL. I have thoughts on both games as I was jumping between them. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR. Conference finals are underway in the NHL and NBA playoffs. They got going last night. Neither game particularly close. Ultimately. Minnesota-Oklahoma City was pretty fun for a little while there.
You know what wasn't?
And then they couldn't make a shot in the second half.
You know what was not good at all for game one? Florida-Carolina. Because the Carolina Panthers are doing exactly what they're destined to do, apparently, which is
the who?
Never shut up. The Carolina Hurricanes are just doing what they're supposed to do. That's the other reason I hate this matchup. Carolina Panthers exist.
Sorry, Josh.
And Carolina and Florida.
Josh said the Panthers in his update. I was listening and I was like, what? Oh, God, Florida Panthers. It's right. I was rattled for like 10 seconds.
Yeah. So I hate that conference final for another reason. But it looks like the Hurricanes are just doing what they do in a conference final, which is lay down and die.
What was Jeremy's stat today? 13 straight Eastern Conference final losses.
Good.
They hadn't lost at home yet this postseason. They immediately enter the Eastern Conference Final, and they're blown out at home. This game was 4-1, and Florida got that fourth goal, I believe, after not having a shot on net for 12 minutes.
Oh, and you know what's also hilarious? That terrible confirmed goal call for Carolina.
Mm.
That puck is kicked in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So even with the ref's help, they can't do anything.
No, and
garbage team, get them out of my Eastern Conference final. Thank you for showing up. You score 2 goals against Florida, and one of them should not have counted because you're opening an entire can of worms that cannot be put back in the bag.
Yep. Sort of like the tush push of like, when are we allowed to all of a sudden push our players? What is going on?
Since when have we been allowed to kick pucks? Apparently 2 years ago with Hudson Bashing.
Bang.
Great. Now I'm mad. Thanks.
Now I'm mad.
This is how I feel about the Eastern Conference final.
And that was not even Florida's A game. It wasn't like they played particularly. I mean, I mentioned it. Like, they hadn't had a shot on net for over 10 minutes.
And meanwhile, I've got the assistant to the general manager cheering for the Carolina Hurricanes in a box and going buck wild for the Hurricanes. Thank you. I hate it. Gross. Yuck. Blah.
And then over in the NBA, we had Oklahoma City blow out Minnesota 114-88. Minnesota couldn't make a shot in the second half. I was flipping between both these games, Derek. And for a little while, Minnesota was going on a run. Their defensive performance in the first half was so good. They held Shea Gilgeous-Alexander to, like, I think 2 of 13 shooting in the first half. They were very impressive. Both teams are otherworldly defensively. I will tell you, though, I was far more – we'll get to that in hour number two. I kind of like watching the Florida Panthers. Like, they are exactly what I want my favorite hockey
team
to look like.
It's not Florida that I have a problem with.
No, it's
in this moment.
It's particularly Carolina.
It is all Carolina. I'm watching the assistant to the general manager cheering on the team. Granted, he played for almost all of his career, right. And his brother's there right now.
It makes sense.
So it makes sense, but also, like, where's the loyalty to the crest, Eric? Come on.
But watching,
and then it's just also they were never this great team. We talked about how the NFL tabled this playoff thing. The NHL needs to change
there's
they've needed to for years.
They desperately need Edmonton and Dallas to go 6 or 7 because this is not.
Yeah, this one's going to go 4.
Just go maybe back 5. To 1 through 8.
Maybe 5.
One plays 8, two plays 7, and so on.
Yes.
Yep. It's the easiest, most simplistic way to do it. Who cares about
you mean how every other league does it
yeah.
where 1 plays 8?
Meanwhile,
and so on and so forth.
Meanwhile, I'm genuinely convinced that the Eastern Conference final happened last series.
Yeah. 100%.
Which is so frustrating because Toronto's also not good.
The problem is
we got to build up the Atlantic Division rivalry, Zach and Derek. You both got to understand. That's what they got to build up.
See, I do like division rivalries, but what they've done with the playoffs has just way overdone it. And so now we're constantly getting big matchups in round 1 and 2.
He's right. I do hate the Florida Panthers because of how good they are in the division, and it's also because they also have a ridiculous way of getting to the Eastern Conference Finals at minimum every year over the last couple of seasons.
They're just better than everybody.
But you don't need division.
It's not that they're better than everybody. It's that they're better than their division.
Well, but whenever they play everybody, they beat them up.
And the Metro has become the NFC South of hockey.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the playoffs don't make you hate them. The division games make you hate them. And then the fact that they're good in the playoffs.
No, the problem is the playoffs make me hate them. I don't care about the fact that Buffalo and Florida themselves hate each other-ish. The Panthers play in a way that make you hate them no matter what, no matter who you are. You could be freaking Winnipeg. You see them twice a year. They hate the Florida Panthers probably. And I just, oh my God. It's the playoffs that make me hate Florida. It's the playoff format that makes me hate Florida. And it also makes me hate the entire Metro Division because nobody is showing up at this point. Like, yeah, last year the Rangers took it to 6. Cool. Other than that, has the Metro Division over the last few years been relevant? Since the playoff change of the format, has the Metropolitan Division had a representative? I'm genuinely curious. And I'm going to look that up during the break.
803-0550, the number 2 call. Always going to take calls on that withdrawn now Detroit playoff proposal. Had a lot of fun with that. Also, though, do want to talk about the playoffs. I do want to talk about Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and being a flop merchant. It is ridiculous. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Byram needs a contract. He's got 2 more years. He's a non-restricted free agent, so Buffalo doesn't have to do anything here with 2 more years of team control. And whenever a team trades for a player like Buffalo did a couple of years ago, you know they see value in him and they like him. So you always have to keep that as part of your overall thinking. But there is no doubt that his name is out there. There's just been an agent change. So that always leads to conversation about what does this mean. But there's no doubt his name is out there. There is no doubt they are gauging market value on him. And we'll see where this takes us. But there is definitely noise around the Byram name and the Buffalo Sabres.
Elliot Friedman there. It's 32 thoughts. I think most hockey fans pretty much read that like the Bible.
Read it, listen to it,
yep.
Learn it, love it.
You know it. And that's talking about, you know, Adams listening about Bowen Byram.
And
which is not surprising.
It's not surprising because all throughout the season, every time Paul Hamilton asked him about wanting to stay in Buffalo, he didn't really give a good answer.
That is right.
Not a good answer, but he would always give a non-answer.
Yeah.
And that's typically leaning toward bad, especially with the state of the team. It does look like Byram probably wants power play time.
Mm-hmm.
He's just on a roster with Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power. I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry.
And before he was with Cale Makar.
Yeah.
That's going to hurt, yeah.
I'm sorry. You're just not getting the time that you want on that. It's just bad draw. Sorry. I'm not moving Owen Power or Rasmus Dahlin off my power play.
Yeah.
I'm just not. And I'd be okay with employing 2 defensemen on a power play, too. You don't need to have 4-1.
I'd like for Buffalo to do anything different on the power play.
If you have the Sabres, 2 defensemen.
Mm.
In Owen Power and Rasmus Dahlin. Tell me Dahlin ain't sniffing around the goal mouth.
Oh, yeah.
Throw Dahlin at left wing and see what happens.
But Dahlin has also
on the power play.
On the power play.
But Dahlin has gotten a little bit better, though, at being the point man, the quarterback of sorts, to where I also don't know if I can move him from there.
Put Byram on the wing, on the power play.
Byram did show he was willing to do that as well. But again, I did like Byram
when he first got here with how much he
was moving.
He very much made the Buffalo power play look completely inept because he showed up from Colorado and you're like, oh boy.
And it was a joy
in Nashville,
to watch.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
Because you watch and you're just like,
he's moving around. Wow. And he's in other players' spots because they're not moving. And it's like, oh, you guys really have an antiquated power play scheme.
I'm pretty sure one of them was Zemgus Girgensons, and he was just kind of like baffled at what. No, it was Okposo. They were just baffled at what to do.
Yeah. And yeah, like wild. It was, oh, you guys run an antiquated power play. Good. Good. Cool. Byram, though, is interesting to me. I've been sitting here for how many months now? Saying something about Mitch Marner, Buffalo Sabre, love idea.
Oh, probably at least 4 or 5 months.
At minimum, it's been a couple.
Yeah.
And now you look at it and go, if they have to trade Bo and Byram. Yeah, offense is not the problem here, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they have to trade Bo and Byram, offense might still be a problem here. What do you have to do sometimes to acquire a premium asset? Give up one. Byram makes that blow a lot easier to deal with. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that the Sabres would know how to cut bait here and try to sell with the relative value of him looking okay. If a team looks at his analytical numbers, yeah, we might have a problem here.
Yeah, just tell them don't do it.
And you could tell old heads to not do that. You can actually convince them very easily to not do that.
I think especially in hockey.
Yeah.
Especially in hockey.
You can get away with that. But it would open up another problem. This team already needs to add another defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
And while I do still confirm the belief that Rasmus Dahlin can play well with anyone next to him because he is Rasmus Dahlin and you do not have to do anything about that, they could put Rochester's Lord and Savior Cal Clegg next
there
to Rasmus Dahlin and they would be perfectly fine.
There it is.
Game 3 tonight, by the way, against Laval.
In Laval, against Laval.
Go win that thing. You could put anyone next to Rasmus Dahlin and probably be okay. At minimum, it's a net neutral game, or Dahlin has a couple of shifts where he doesn't look too good because he has to carry like Jacob Bryson.
Mm-hmm.
It's about getting a line mate or a partner for Owen Power because Byram showed well with Dahlin, which is, again, I just mentioned that. I could probably get away with stealing a plus playing with Rasmus Dahlin. I'd have to come off the bench mm-hmm. for a change, and Dahlin's on the rush, and they score a goal, but that's how I would do it. But I'd get a plus one for that. But it has to do with you need to find someone for Power so that he can get more comfortable and grow. Because Power is heading toward the, all right, it's time to make the switch. Like, you're heading into jumpier for a lot of defensemen, oftentimes. Because defensemen do take a little bit of a while.
Power yeah, but you're right. Like, this is the
but
year.
But last year, Power started showing those flashes, especially in the later part of the year. And when I had, oddly enough, next to him, Jacob Bernard Docker. A defensively responsible right-handed shot.
It's kind of working. It was kind of working.
He was showing more of those flashes. He had a solid production season. Defensively was his problem. But you need someone there to help stabilize him
mm-hmm.
and allow him to play his best hockey, keep his mind off of it. If Byram leaves, that need becomes greater. And welcome to why Mitch Marner is the face of the ideal. I need the Sabres to show that they are aggressive. And you could still go inside Mitch Marner and have that problem. You want to know why you have players that you can trade from the offense that, yeah, you don't want to, but you might have to part ways with. I love J.J. Paterka as a player. He's a fun, energetic player. He does have problems in the D-zone. He does have inconsistency to his game. He also could land you a skating mate for Owen Power by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And a quality one at that. He can land you a third defenseman on this team that can play on the first or second pair by himself.
So if you sign a Mitch Marner, you can make that trade and feel a little bit better about yourself.
But at least for me, it would show they're doing things.
And that's the face of the ideal.
Yeah, it would just show they're doing
probably,
stuff.
Probably, and you know, analytic charts probably wouldn't like this. I'm not even fully in love with the idea, but I think the Sabres need to be players for Aaron Ekblad.
Now, Josh's a big fan. Josh's a big fan.
So I do think that there's, you know, obviously your health concerns with Ekblad, but it's a right-handed shot that you could play next to Owen Power and have zero concerns.
I just, my concern, like you mentioned, it's the health concerns. They've just added a guy in a trade who already has massive health concerns in Josh Norris. We basically didn't get to see him play. I mean, he played a few games for Buffalo, don't get me wrong, but for most of it, you kind of forget he's even on the roster.
Yeah.
You know, I think for a lot of us, including me, the big bonus of the Dylan Cousins trade was getting him off the roster.
I almost forget at times
that when Norris isn't playing, oh yeah, that's right, he's there. My big thing with adding defensemen,
I
can't have the defense fall apart when Rasmus Dahlin gets hurt.
I also have a defenseman that was seen as a top four who kept getting himself hurt.
Yeah.
Granted, ultimately, even the vision of him being a top four defenseman was wrong in Matthias Samuelsson. I don't know necessarily if Ekblad's the right idea. That's why I said even I don't feel great saying it.
Yeah.
Like, Josh, you could be all giddy you want in there. If he's not, if he's playing 54 games, you're telling me that the Sabres' defensive core is healthy or is structured? No.
I don't think it's the best idea.
Oh, yeah, no. And with the Sabres, you have to talk about imperfect ideas because that's what it is. Even adding Mitch Marner is an imperfect idea. You're going to have to overpay him to do it. But that doesn't mean that it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I love you, Paul, but come on, buddy.
Speaking
add players like Mitch Marner because they only come around once every 10-ish years anyway.
Yeah.
Add a player like that because you move players down the roster. Add a player like that because then you could trade a Paterka easily to get...
To add more.
A defenseman that can challenge to be the second best player on your defensive core. He could challenge Owen Power to being that second best defenseman. And Paterka can do that by himself in a trade deal. Because he's young and he is ascending. And you could get the world for him right now. Not the world, but you know what I mean. So, yeah. Love you, Paul, but I had to say that.
It'll be interesting to keep an eye on this Bo Byram stuff.
It was like the itch that I needed to get to.
I get it. It'll be interesting, though, to keep up on this Bo Byram stuff. I have liked when Adams makes, quote-unquote, hockey trades. I think he's done very well with them. You've mentioned he's done very well also on moving off of players at the right time.
And Casey Mittelstadt. Dylan Cousins, I would even say it is the right time to do it because he's still got a player that should have production in him in Josh Norris.
We'll see, yep.
And now Bowen Byram
is
looking like that ideal of, okay, maybe we need to actually get rid of this player because it's not looking good.
Yeah, but ultimately you're not missing too much with Casey Mittelstadt. It's not like, oh, God, how do we let that in? No.
Immediately I can think you're going to get a better trade return than what Colorado got from Boston for Casey Mittelstadt.
Who is floundering. That's fun.
So now this doesn't necessarily have to do with play alone, where yes, it does look like Byram has his struggles without Rasmus Dahlin.
Mm-hmm. His struggles. The numbers are not kind.
Yeah, they're not kind. I'm being nice here because I'm trying to trade him.
Oh, yeah, fair. Yeah. Forgot. Old heads don't look at the analytics.
Yeah.
You see that red?
Also, I'm being nice because I'm trying to trade him.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, it's one of the funniest things that I'll always hear from, like, anyone really of like how pissed a fan base could be at a player.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone tries to suggest trading Matthias Samuelsson, the answer is for what?
Yeah, what are you getting?
Other teams do have eyeballs, and they will see that he's not good. And this is something that historically has always happened. You hate a player, and the fan base gets mad saying, oh, you need to trade him. Well, okay, what are you getting? What team is saying, okay, yeah, I'll take the guy that you clearly think is garbage?
Yeah, right. It's where like
why should I want him?
It was always like the famous like trade ideas.
Great selling pitch.
I'm gonna trade the three players that are all kind of bad in a second round pick for the superstar. Like that's always the fun trade ideas.
And it's even just I just need this guy traded so he's off the roster again. Great sales pitch you're making.
Yeah, right. Oh, I mentioned that with Dylan Cousins. It's why like they got Norris. I was like, cool. Greg, yeah. The positive here is Cousins is not on the roster.
Yes.
Everything else is a bonus.
But again, Cousins does inherently carry value. Byram, at his age, does inherently carry value.
He does.
And I'm not going to disparage him on the way out because I want to get something in return.
That makes sense. Makes sense.
Much like how I was kind of saying it about Dylan Cousins.
Yeah, like right, we're gonna build him up in this two or three weeks.
When did I say leading up to the trade deadline that he was pure garbage? Don't quote me on that. I don't know, and it would take a lot of work to find it because I'm not on here very often.
But we've all been there.
We've all done it. And I love every single one of you that does it because the answer is for bleeping what?
I mean, sometimes it happens, though.
That's emotional.
The worst part. But it's the worst part. It's like sometimes a team does make a big trade, and you're like, we gave up that? That's it? All right. Let's ride. Like, it happens every now and then.
It happens every now and then.
Not often, but every now and then.
Yes. But the Sabres saw something, and when Casey Mittelstadt got traded, I recognized that as they didn't sign a deal with him yet. Contractually, mm-hmm. they know it's time.
Yeah.
And this is sounding like Byram.
It's the exact same situation.
But when Mittelstadt mm-hmm. was coming due for his contract, everyone was getting extensions. There's the difference.
Well, everyone was getting extensions, and Adams even sounded like he was getting ready to give Mittelstadt an extension.
But it didn't happen, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, the writing's on the wall. It's not on his contract. It's on the wall.
Yeah.
There's no contract coming. He's going to be gone, and like, yeah, that's going to sting a little bit because of the fact that at the time, he was their best point producer.
Mm-hmm.
God,
see,
two seasons ago was haunting.
And I know it's GM speak. I know it's GM speak, but like Adams did make it sound like about 2 weeks before that they were prepared to give him a contract, that yes. they were working towards that, and then quote unquote this deal just materialized, and they're like, oh, cool, perfect. The Byram situation, the difference there is like no one feels confident that it's
no one
happen.
Feels confident.
Byram that is giving non-answers. I think Adams is borderline giving non-answers. Like it's. He's already, to many people, I'd imagine, kind of are like, you don't think he'll be on this roster opening night next year.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because right now, what the team has is control. He is an RFA. Is he?
I want to make sure of that.
But either way, you have an opportunity there to make sure you get what you can for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're also in a position to get what you can for him, but you've had enough time to figure out if he's going to work.
So
that's the key. You've had enough time to figure out if he's going to work. He is not somebody you can put away from Rasmus Dahlin. His numbers are dreadful when he's away from Dahlin, and I know we're trying to build him up, but like that's ultimately the big part is that he does not look good away from the team's best defenseman. Now, when they're together, it can be very fun at times.
It's not only very fun at times; it's good hockey.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm selling is, hey, this is an ultimate, like, he can skate 25 minutes a game for you. He's got to have the right partner, but he can skate 25 minutes a game for you. My problem is contractually, he's not signing. He's an RFA. He's 24. So there's team control even when you acquire him, mm-hmm. by the way.
Yep.
And he almost averaged a point every other game.
Yeah.
It was almost half a point per game, 0.46.
So, he is a very tradable asset. He's a very tradable asset.
0.46 PPG, which according to somebody on Twitter meant power play guy, apparently.
Love that. But I am curious to see what Adams can get for him. Or if Byram is partnered with the 9th overall pick, a prospect would have you in a much bigger trade. Or if it's what Adams has kind of become more known for with the Sabres, which is a player-for-player trade, plus maybe like a prospect here or two.
This screams player-for-player trade.
It does.
I have something that I can't get signed, but you need. And you get control.
Mm-hmm.
Give me something I need.
Yeah. And it works out.
And it works out. The problem is that it's a redundant good if you're trying to upgrade the defenseman. You need to grab another piece and make it happen.
That's the tough part with Byram is that that's already the big need on the team.
Already
defense.
The need. So that's where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm.
Can you figure out a way to make that work? And the Sabres kind of did that with Cousins for Norris. A 2C for a 2C on the depth chart.
Yeah.
Awesome. And my only problem with Adams has typically been do it more. You need to do it here.
And it sounds like from Elliott Friedman, he's already kind of at least preparing to work the phones a lot more.
Yes. So you wanted to say something, by the way, about the Eastern Conference Finals. We were talking the entire break, by the way, about how I just hate what has happened with the rules.
Yeah.
And by the way, I have some numbers for you. I went back and did this. Ever since the change to in 2014 to this mm-hmm. new playoff format that they currently have, the Metropolitan Division has not really shown up that much.
No, which is unsurprising based off looking at
since
the playoffs,
2014,
right?
There have been 4 representatives of the Metropolitan Division, the last one showing up in 2018.
Mm.
And as a matter of fact, the Atlantic Division, technically, had a Stanley Cup Finals matchup in 2021.
Give me a second. I'm trying to think of who it was. Tampa was in it, right?
Tampa won it against...
Oh, Montreal?
Montreal.
Yeah, no, yeah. I thought that's what it was. I'm like, that's not right.
Metropolitan Division, can you show up for once, please? Because, by God, it has been bad ever since 2018 when the Capitals won it.
Yeah.
It's been Boston, Tampa, Tampa against Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Tampa, Florida, Florida, probably Florida.
Gonna be Florida.
We just need to nerf the state of Florida.
We're in the golden age of Florida hockey right now. I want them to go to 1 through 8. I do want that. My problem is, and where I am giving Florida a lot of credit, and I guess maybe to the Atlantic Division a lot of credit here, is they're just simply better. Their teams are better than the Met teams.
And the teams better.
Maybe we get less Metropolitan teams. I don't know how much that ultimately is going to change.
I want my best games to be the final
Disagree. And that's where I want 1 through 8. I don't disagree. But where, like with football, I think seeding matters a ton. I think it matters a lot. Why? It's one game.
Yeah.
It is one game. Where with baseball, with basketball, and with hockey, the best teams
typically win those sets.
Typically win out. Like, as much as the NHL likes to really, and it is right for the first round, a lot of parity, best teams get through, baby.
Except they don't. Sometimes they don't.
Florida's going to make a third straight Stanley Cup final. They are one of the best teams in hockey. Inarguably, they're one of the best teams in hockey.
I still look at the fact that, like, Dallas, Colorado was a first round matchup.
Mm hmm. Oh, I don't like it. I don't like it. It does take away some of these best teams. But ultimately, I think they then would just be playing each other later. I think you'd lose out on some of these. And hockey is still a crazy sport. I'm not disagreeing. But Florida's going to make a third straight Stanley Cup final. They are one of the best teams in hockey. They're proving it year in and year out. Tampa went back-to-back Stanley Cup final wins. Colorado had their run. Vegas has been around forever. They finally won a cup. Like, the best teams are still winning.
And here's the thing. If you went 1 through 8, by the way, the teams that are gone, 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, 8 in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
4 and 5 are your matchup for the Eastern Conference final. Spare me.
Yeah, I don't like the seedings.
Yeah, and in the West, 1, 2, 4, 5, 7, 8.
Mm-hmm.
It's a matchup between 3 and 6. And honestly, the Carolina Hurricanes, I genuinely believe we're just gift-wrapped a conference final appearance.
Yeah, they got really lucky in terms of their seeding. They did, in terms of the teams they got to play.
Right.
Because they didn't play New Jersey, did they?
They did.
So New Jersey opening round and then Washington. It's pretty nice. It's pretty good.
New Jersey, who, by the way, finished with less points than Ottawa.
Oh,
but
really?
They get an automatic playoff spot because more rivalries. And by the way, rivalries have been created through the playoffs relatively organically, Gary.
It's where a lot of these rivalries are made, is playoff matchups.
Oh, my God.
Now, you sometimes do get divisional playoff matchups, and those can be fun. I'm not disagreeing with that. But like tonight, the Eastern Conference Final in basketball is the Pacers-Knicks. They've never been in the same division. All of their rivalry comes from the playoffs.
And it's natural. It's organic. It's through the playoffs. It's through, I want to get to the finals.
Mm-hmm. And especially, too, you get those organics much more in series sports. in playoffs where you're playing maybe seven games against each other and it is high intensity and there's a lot of stress. NFL, I think it is much easier to build the division rivalries because it's one game and you're going to play each other twice and you've only got a handful of games. It's also why I think the regular season is more popular, you know, relative to the rest of the leagues, because there's so few games. Every game means so much. But when you look at these divisional rivalries, they don't need to be created in the playoffs. They'll happen naturally. You'll get there. I promise you, you'll get there. You know, teams might hate each other if they play each other again. Edmonton, Florida. It might be really cool if they wind up playing each other in the Stanley Cup final again. You know, Toronto, Boston was already created, but it got better in the playoffs. You didn't really need to be in the Atlantic. It just kind of happened. It was what it was. I just, for me, as much as I would change the 1 versus 8, I think the real conversation there, outside of it would give us better playoff matchups later, which would be awesome, ultimately, we're still kind of getting rid of the Metropolitan teams. They still all kind of don't square up to the Atlanta teams at all. Florida, I still think, is in this position. They are just better than everybody. And that was ultimately my big point at the start of the hour. I think we have to start giving them credit as one of the best teams built in the last 15 years.
And you're right.
They are incredible.
They are. It just, I don't know how the, like, it just seems to me like, I don't understand how it is getting to such an imbalance here. Like, yeah, Washington ended up with the best record in the Eastern mm-hmm. Conference.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think that's just because the rest of the Metro is kind of garbage.
Yeah, oh, probably. It's bad roster builds.
The Buffalo Sabres.
In every sport.
The Buffalo Sabres had an incredible 3-game series against Washington. They went 2-1, and they blew the doors off them in victories. The Sabres.
Yeah.
The Sabres did that to the best team in the Metro.
But I mean, like this is true in every sport. In the NFL, we went through, like, what, 14 years of the NFC winning Super Bowls?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just straight.
And then the Sabres did go full Sabres and get swept by Philadelphia this year.
But we've had that in every sport. It's years, it's flows where, yeah, like there's a certain division, certain conference, they're just not up to snuff. In the NBA right now, most of the superstars are in the West.
But I don't need one of these divisions getting an automatic Eastern Conference qualifier if they're not up to snuff right now. That's my thing.
No, and that's more where it comes into seeding. Ultimately, we'd still get rid of these teams, but also Carolina still might make a run to the Eastern Conference semifinals. You know, especially
that's fine if they're semifinals.
Yeah. But especially with how seeding goes, it might happen.
I think that the Eastern Conference final happened.
Yeah, it happened already.
And it's weird for me to say that Toronto was probably that.
I think, though, that happens in a lot of sports where we end up making that conversation of, well, the round past was actually the conference finals. The round past was actually the championship series or championship game. 803-0550, the number to call. Tony, Randy, we'll get to you here if you hang on the other side. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer. You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show on WGR. We have your ticket to 8 amazing golf experiences with the WGR VIP golf cart for just one low price of $129. Unlock a season of golfing adventures, including Diamond Hawk, Shamrock Hills, Attica's 10th hole, and golf course, Bobolink, and Golf Dojo. Your WGR VIP golf cart also hooks you up with a free box of premium Vero X1 golf balls from Encore Golf. And score deals at Rick Zurak's Golf Warehouse on Transit in Bowmansville. A portion of the proceeds will benefit PGA Hope. Get all the details and purchase your WGR VIP golf cart at getmyperks.com. Zach Jones and Derek Kramer.
We ready for some rapid fire?
Yeah, we're hanging here on WGR, and we're going to get connected to our fans right now, starting with Roy on the line. Roy, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys?
Doing well.
You got a lot going.
Excellent. Just got a couple things. One, on the Owen Power thing, and then even talking, I love the idea of moving Paterka to get another defenseman, and we're talking about getting a defenseman to pair with Power. When we look at the analytics for Power and we talk about how he got better playing with Bernard Docker, do we ever have any analytics that look at when games matter versus when games don't? Like, when you know you're not going to make the playoffs and you're playing against backup goaltenders for the last 2 months and you're playing against guys who might be taking nights off, like, I don't know if I'm as impressed as I am. I have quarter seasons. I went to 15 games this year, and even when he looked good, I think we know what we get out of him. He's going to be a Tyler Myers guy, and that's fine, but at $9 million a year, I'd almost rather have two of those guys at $5 million that I bring in. And then the last thing, if you guys could address that, the second thing was, how about on the reseeding for the playoffs? I love the 1-8 idea would be great, but I think there's even one better than that. Why not go back to the way they did it in the 70s and just seeded 1 through 16.
Ooh.
If Calgary and Edmonton play for the Cup, Calgary and Edmonton play for the Cup. If the Rangers play Boston for the Cup, give me the two best teams. Enough of weak divisions making it through and getting to a conference finals. I think it would be so much more fun for hockey, and the upsets would be so much more meaningful too when they happened. If you saw a 15 knock off a 2 or a 14 knock off a 3, it would be that much more meaningful, and it would reverberate all the way through if you did it that way.
Roy, so thanks for the.
Interested to hear your thoughts on it, guys.
Yeah, Roy, thanks for the call.
My thoughts are that's a spicy boy.
I want to get to that, but let's start with Owen Power. The analytics point, I don't think we have anything on that. It is that I think is always a fun point to bring up with any sport is, hey, you're out of the playoffs and you're playing better. Does that quote-unquote really count? The Sabres, I think, also had, 2 years ago when they like lit the league on fire. Goal scoring-wise, it was like, yeah, but how many backup goalies are you playing? Like, is that really sustainable, or is this more you're getting the treatment of a bottom feeder? That's always something that's brought up. I think Power, though, I don't want to say if he's necessarily a Tyler Myers type. I think
we'll see this year.
Yeah.
When those types of players, especially defensemen, like I said, I saw flashes from Power where I'm like, come on, this is not a player to get rid of yet.
Mm-hmm.
And because we saw this years ago with Dahlin.
Right.
How many people were very quick to the trigger of, okay, maybe this guy is not who we all thought he would be. That might happen here with Power. People are saying maybe this guy's not who we thought he would be. And I know part of it is because he's gigantic and he doesn't crush people. But
he does need to get bigger, though.
He does.
He's 6'6". He can't be 185.
Well, yes. But also, he just needs to play smarter in his own zone.
Yeah.
And typically that comes with time for a number one overall pick at defenseman or a high drafted defenseman. Hedman became Hedman only after 4 or 5 years. Ekblad became Ekblad. And it didn't happen right away.
Yeah.
Like, this is something that happens with defensemen that are taken early. Stay the course. That's all I'll say about it.
And, yeah, get him a partner that works, what have you. The 1-16 idea.
You heard my reaction the minute you said it.
I love that for one reason and one reason. There's
unique
other reasons.
Matchups.
But my favorite reason, unique matchups, yes. The only league that would be doing it. It would be genuinely different from everybody else. And to Roy's point, too, like, if you did get a 15-over-2, it's like the NCAA tournament. That all of a sudden becomes the story of the tournament.
As
and they don't
said.
Have to necessarily be a bad team. Like 15 seeds, it was always kind of this feeling, and I've talked a lot about it with the NCAA tournament. We like it for about 15 minutes, and then we're like, okay, my bracket's busted, get out. Like, where's my Dukes, where's my Kentuckys, where's my North Carolina? These teams could still be good and could go on a run. They just happen to be a little bit lower on the rung.
Tell me that Minnesota doesn't have a chance against Washington this year.
There we go. And so it all of a sudden becomes way more interesting.
Oddly enough, 1 versus 16. Oh, wait, hang on. I missed it.
Oh, no. So now Minnesota, Washington. That was kind of cool. I like that
idea.
No,
ready? It would have been Montreal against Winnipeg.
There we go.
And the Devils.
Actually, I like that a lot.
Versus Washington.
I like all of those a lot, actually.
Montreal takes on Vegas in a Western Conference rematch.
Ew.
No, Western being the question because of...
Oh, yeah, well...
That's what it was a couple of years ago with the bubble.
Yep.
And the all-Canadian division.
I like that. I like that idea a lot. It's different from everybody else, and because you
do
have
first-round
parity...
Oh, my God, Minnesota would play Toronto.
Oh, yeah, give me that. Because I mentioned, the NHL doesn't have as much parity after the first round as maybe you'd like to see. Because the best teams, I do still think, make it to the Cup Finals. They make it to the Stanley Cup, what have you. But those first round matchups would be a ball to watch.
So cool.
Next up, Randy on the line. Randy, you're on WGR. How are we doing today?
Gentlemen, good morning. First and foremost, Derek, I want to say shout out North Collins Fighting Eagles. I'm a big advocate for the schools out there. Huge Angola fan myself. Shout out to Pat Mix real quick, fighting in UFC 317, Angola native, coming up in a few weeks. Very exciting stuff. I will say, guys, I'm a diehard Bills fan, huge bandwagon Sabres fan. And we've got a few buddies that are Maple Leaf fans. I'm sure we all do. I watched that game the other night. Oh, my God. I don't know much about hockey, but I know if one team's in your end for 55 minutes,
it's not good.
So that's no good. But
reminds me of the Sabres.
I felt like I was, it was unfortunate. So. But back on the Bill train, totally off topic. I know we're on a hot hockey topic right now, but man, I just got to say, guys, when the schedule, I mean, I'm going back a week now,
if the Bills, oh my, the one seed's right there, guys. Mm-hmm. It's right there. If they, the last 5 years, if they could have just three out of the last 5 years, one more win here or there, I truly believe they would have went to the Super Bowl with the one seed. It's right there. It's for the taking. Go Sabres. Go Bills. God bless.
Thanks for the call, Randy.
Whoop.
He dropped off. It's okay.
Okay.
Got the point. Love it. Love that you said you're a bandwagon Sabres fan. That's painful, and I'm sorry.
Also,
that hurts.
That takes stones to be a bandwagon Sabres fan. You're joining us at our low point, as Deadpool said.
Respect. Hat tip to you.
By the way, the not Derek with the North Collins thing. That's Josh.
That's Josh.
Also, we're the Eagles, not the Fighting Eagles.
I'll fight you.
Point that out.
Eagle.
It's a lot of Eagles. My mascot was also an Eagle in high school.
If I pick a fight better, with you, probably. You're a Fighting Eagle. So
probably. On the Bill schedule thing, Warren Sharp yesterday joined Shopin the Bulldog, and he had mentioned, I think a lot of us have talked about it, they have on paper the fifth easiest schedule. It does seem to be pointing to the Bills need to get the one seed this year. And I do argue the Bills specifically, if they got the one seed with the injuries they had picked up in years prior in those wild card matchups or late in the season, that resting instead of having to play what ultimately is kind of a foregone conclusion, the two is probably going to beat the seven. I think that would have helped them along the way. Maybe also being home, but we've also seen the Bills lose home playoff games, so I don't want to lean on that one. I think it's far more the injury and avoiding those potential injuries.
It's just the one thing in the regular season you haven't accomplished yet.
Yeah, right.
That's all it is.
Literally, it's the one thing in the regular season you haven't done yet.
Yeah.
You've won a ton, you've scored a ton, you just got to get the one seed. Last up for this segment, James is on the line. James, you're on WGR.
Hi. Morning. I just want you guys to pump the brakes on Mitch Marner a little bit. I know that you've got your own jobs listening, talking here, and I don't know if you've been listening too much to the Toronto media, but like, guy scores a bunch of points against weak opponents during the regular season, doesn't stick up for his own. There's no grit, there's no hard backbone there, and then in the playoffs he appears. I know it's a different situation. Toronto, 9 years straight into the playoffs, and Buffalo's a little not. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of talk in Buffalo about lack of grit, lack of show up when your own are getting roughed up. I'm not sure that Mitch is exactly what you're looking for. Is he really?
James, I will counter with this. I appreciate the thoughts, but. Toronto became a playoff team the minute Mitch Marner arrived. He's an all-world talent. And I know that there's plenty of people within Toronto's fan base that have soured on Mitch Marner at this point. I don't need Mitch Marner to get in there. I need Mitch Marner to be protected. And the rest of the team does seem to have the moxie at this point that they're doing that. Save for a couple of names. Also, I want to break a playoff drought, man.
Yeah.
I don't care. You're talking as a person that has made the playoffs 9 straight years. I would kill to be in your position. And part of killing includes handing Mitch Marner a boatload of money.
That's why a lot of Buffalo fans are going to be in on that. There may be the playoff struggles. I've mentioned this a lot.
Players
though.
Like Mitch Marner do not hit free agency very often.
But I've mentioned this when talking about Marner. I will deal with the playoff issues when my team is in the playoffs. Before that, I'm just trying to break what is, at this point, a well past historically long playoff drought for
also,
hockey.
Also, Marner, it's on his mind. He's a human being.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to go ahead and pretend that Mitch Marner not getting it done for his hometown team doesn't take a toll on him.
Mm-hmm. Getting connected to our fans, it is brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we'll wrap up today's show. Get you ready for Sabres Live coming up at the top of the hour. This is WGR. So we were wrong.
Oh my God, we were. I wasn't wrong. I didn't say anything about would it or would it not get banned. But the tush push stays. Which means we get
push
another.
On, to quote the Eagles.
Yes. By the way, it requires 75% support to pass. It does not. Two votes short of the 75% needed. So tushes will continue to be pushed in the year 2025. And again, does it change anything really if it does get banned? for the two teams that are most successful? No.
Albert Breer, Eagles owner Jeffrey Lurie, assistant GM John Ferrari, and center Jason Kelsey.
Legend.
Albert Breer's legend. It's center Jason Kelsey. Spoke for around 45 minutes in the general session. Kelsey's speech focused on the mechanics of the play and how, in his view, it is not overtly dangerous. Among the others to address the room were Dallas' Jerry Jones, San Francisco's Jed York, and Buffalo's Terry Pegula.
Terry, I need you talking to Mitch Marner, not to the NFL owners.
Not about the tush push. I do find it interesting, though.
Terrence.
And this will be my last thought on this. I do find it interesting that ultimately it was the health of the play, because that's where Kelsey's speech was going.
Again, I'm going to say it for like maybe the 100th time at this point. Stop lying to everyone. Stop lying to yourselves, okay? If you want this band, if you really want this band, just be real. You're using non-evidence for injuries.
Mm-hmm.
To point out that it's a dangerous play. And in fact, there is nothing supporting that claim. You are lying. Be real. Say that the play just looks bad.
Yeah, that's about it. But now it is.
That was my final words, and I'm glad we don't have to talk about it for a whole year.
For a whole year. Yeah, because it's right. It's going to get brought back. It's absolutely going to get brought back. But yes, the tush push is going to stay. And with that, that is going to do it for me and Derek. It's coming up after a quick timeout. Sabres Live. You're listening to WGR.